but that one they also beat and treated shamefully and sent away empty-handed. He sent still a third, and they wounded him and threw him out. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my son, whom I love. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the tenants saw him, they talked the matter over. "This is the heir," they said. "Let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. "What then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and kill those tenants and give the vineyard to others." When the people heard this, they said, "May it never be." Jesus looked directly at them and asked, "Then what is the meaning of that which is written? The stone the builders rejected has become the capstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, but he on whom it falls will be crushed." The teachers of the law and the chief priests looked for a way to arrest him immediately, because they knew he had spoken this parable against them. But they were afraid of the people. My topic today is how we should read the Bible. I'm going to start by sharing a story with you. 2 years ago, at Vicar School at Oxford, Bishop Humph, the boss, was holding forth on Easter. And because he's a bishop and he was the boss of Vicar School, I thought I'd better listen, because I might need to be in his good books at some time. So he was telling us about an Easter Eve vigil that he conducted. Now, this is where basically you spend the night before Easter in prayer. And then he was with a group of trainee vicars. And they did this all-night service. They settled down in sleeping bags and with blankets, and no doubt they were fortified with plentiful supplies of single malt whiskey and dark chocolate and pork scratchings, because I know from experience that's what you need at Oxford for an all-night vigil when you're at vicar school. And as he described it, they sat around and told each other stories about God. Then there was the dawn. They gathered round, they lit the Easter brazier, and they gave thanks to God for the resurrection. Laudate Dominum, because this is Oxford and they say things in Latin there. But I mean, what's not to like about that as a service? So my mind raced ahead as to how I could transfer it here to Highley. Then I spotted a flaw. That probably would work very well with a bunch of Oxford trainee vicars. Each had consumed a bottle of whiskey. But here, in fact, anywhere other than Vicar School at Oxford. Sadly, I decided this was one idea that probably wasn't going to transfer very well. I mean, apart from anything else, our budget here wouldn't even run to the pork scratchings, never mind the whiskey. Yet within that, I think there is an important idea, something we can learn from when we approach the Bible. Now, there are a number of ways we can look at the Bible. We often call it Bible study, and that conjures up visions of people sitting around in a circle, their Bibles open, perhaps taking notes as they listen to a trained leader who expounds on his or her favoured passages. And I don't knock that as a method. Those of you who are going to my Holy Habits group may recognise the style. In fact, I suspect that's pretty much what the person who wrote Hebrews had in mind in our epistle. He was telling his readers they needed to apply themselves much more studiously to the Bible. And it's hard actually to disagree. If you really want to engage with the Epistle to the Hebrews, you need a pretty good knowledge of what's gone on in the Old Testament, and it actually helps to have a knowledge of Second Temple Judaism and the beliefs involved there as well. So you need a guide. Now, do bear in mind that you don't necessarily need to have a guide in a dog collar. There are plenty of sources out there. And sometimes the sources might be better informed than the bloke in the dog collar. A few months ago, I was preaching at Chelmarsh Church. Mike, if you could just close your ears at this point, please. And it was the wedding of Cana at Galilee. Jesus turns the water into the wine. And the sort of turning point of that story is when Mary turns to Jesus, they've run out of wine, and says, go on, do something. And in my version of the Bible, Jesus says, woman, my time has not come. And I thought, that's a bit rude, really, isn't it? So I was sort of made a little point. I was going to bring that into my sermon. Then Derek, the church warden, who was going to read the lesson, came up to me and he said those words all preachers dread. Vicar, you probably know this already, but... Because Derek, unlike myself, had actually read some commentaries. And he discovered that my translation probably wasn't a very good one. In the original Aramaic, it was much more likely Jesus was using a term of affection. What he probably said was something along the lines of, dear woman, my time has not yet come. Well, I tell that story for a couple of reasons. Firstly, to encourage you to do your own study, and particularly don't believe everything that I tell you. But also do it because it can enrich your study, your understanding of the Bible. Knowing that Jesus wasn't being rude here actually does put that story in that line in a very different context. You've got to be a little bit careful with your own study. There are a fair bit of nonsense, particularly on the internet. But nonetheless, if you use it carefully, talk to other people, do sometimes talk to those in dog collars or whatever, it can be fun, it can be rewarding, and it will enrich your understanding of the Bible. So there is certainly a place for this more academic type of approach to the Bible. And yet, I come back to Bishop Humph and his stories. When you know all there is to know about the history of the text, the context in which the words were spoken, the linguistic complexities, you're still faced with a question. What does this passage tell me about God? Because that's why the Bible was written. The Bible is not meant to be a textbook of history or law. It's not a collection of poems or wisdom literature. Now, it may well be all of those things, but the people who wrote it did so because they wanted to tell their readers something about God, to bring them closer to God. And therein lies the problem. Because the Book of Common Prayer puts it, God passeth human understanding. The full reality of God is beyond our understanding. The best theologian in the world only ever sees through a glass darkly, the same glass that we are trying to peer through to make sense of mystery. Make a sense of something that we can never ever capture just by words, just with our intellect. Now Jesus knew this, and so Jesus told stories. And our New Testament lesson is one of these, a parable. He encouraged his readers to use their imaginations, to enter into his tales, because very often He left them to supply the punchline. So in our New Testament reading today, as he started, his people sat down and began to listen to him. They would have recognized the scenario because they were good Jews and they knew that the prophet Isaiah had famously written about a vineyard and its owner. And they would have recognized straight away that the owner of the vineyard was God. And they were right. But in Isaiah, the owner comes and destroys the vineyard. Jesus does something very different with that story. In Jesus' story, the vineyard is precious. It's the renters, the tenants, who are the problem. Now, the listeners might have expected that the owner, God, would have sent in armed men to throw out these troublesome tenants. Instead, the owner sends his son, unarmed, defenseless, who the tenants kill. Only then is there judgment. So what kind of owner is this? What kind of God is this who risks his own son to claim back what is rightfully his? And what does that say about Jesus? Who was Jesus saying he was in this parable? Was he really saying that he was the son who God had sent to die? Jesus doesn't actually tell them. Jesus leaves that to their imaginations. He gives some hints, but they are the ones who have to do some work after this story to join up the dots. They've got to use their imaginations to ponder, to pray, to wonder. Because really, what else can you do when you meet mystery but to use your imagination? So yes, read the commentaries, read all the sources, try and understand the scriptures. But more importantly, use your imaginations as well when you read them. Use them as inspiration for prayer, for contemplation, song, dancing, art, whatever turns you on, whatever you like, enter into them. It's only when you do this that you can properly meet the God of mystery, the God of redeeming love, who suffered, died, and rose again, who calls out to us all through ancient scriptures to live with him in the present. Listen, and then you can tell your own story as well. Amen.